Hello, good evening, and welcome to a bit of a different episode of the Super License F1 podcast. I'm Rodney.
I'm Zach.
Zach, what on earth are we going to do? We've been putting this off a little bit, but it's time to talk F1 and we just have to get to it.
Yeah, we are not feeling great about it.
No.
You know, it's a somber mood, if you were going to sum it up in one word. We're trying to still inject a little bit of joy around Formula 1 because it's something we love, but it's also with that genuine passion and love for it means we get slapped around by tough news. So yeah, if you want to head straight into it?
Yeah, we may as well.
Guido van der Gaard. Hey, how are you? I was going to say a Dutch swear word. It's the only Dutch word I know, but I don't know. My it's what does that mean? Okay, it's not so bad. Oh, phew. Oh, it's the only Dutch word I know.
Obviously, we had the Japanese Grand Prix this weekend, and there was many stories happening before the race, but they all got completely drowned out, including the race itself, when towards the end of the race, the Marussia driver, Jules Bianchi, had a very serious accident.
A really serious accident. Where, look, you're a Formula One fan, you know all about this, you can't avoid it, but has slid sideways into one of the removal cranes and has severe nerve damage and brain injuries.
Yeah.
And it's currently in a critical condition.
From what I understand, it's not too dissimilar to what happened to Michael Schumacher. I think one of the surgeons that treated Schumacher has actually flown over to see if he can help in any way. And that's the big thing is everyone wants to help. All the drivers have rushed to the hospital. The family have gathered. The Bianchi family is at the hospital. Mm. They've put out a few statements. Obviously, they're not letting too many details out, but it's usually along the lines of, you know, it's very serious. He's still critical. But I mean, the one thing the family have said, which was really good, was they appreciate all the outpouring of goodwill and affection from the teams, the fans, everybody. That's us, that's you guys, everybody. You know, I mean, hashtag Forza Jules became the predominant Twitter.
And still is.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's if you're going to take any sort of silver lining or happiness out of the situation, is just to really see the strength of this Formula One community. You know, everybody's rallying behind this cause. You know, I love that Ferrari's taken it upon themselves to go, this guy's part of our young driver program and we owe him a duty of care. We're responsible as well for this guy's health and safety. And, you know, flying over specialist neurosurgeons from Italy and, you know, the staff staying at the hospital with the family, you know, through the entire time. We're hearing great stories about, as you said, about drivers being there, especially Felipe Massa. You know, he's one of the first guys there post-race because he knows what serious race injuries are like.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to get a little bit lulled into the entertainment value of Formula One and forget how serious it is. And you can get a little bit flippant when someone like Martin Brundle is like, you know, these guys are out there risking their lives. And you go, yeah, but is anybody really risking their lives? And then, you know, you thunder back down to earth when something like this happens. And,
yeah,
you know, I don't really know how to put that sort of malaise of a feeling out there.
I think that's part of the problem. No one really knows how to react. Part of the issue is that he's still, you know, he hasn't, no prognosis has been made either way. We don't really know the actual condition of Jules at the moment. And we're all obviously hoping for the best.
Mm.
But until we hear one way or the other, it's going to be difficult for us all to get closure, to start thinking about Formula One in a bit more of a positive way and start moving on. I mean, obviously, I mean, Sochi is going to start happening very, very soon. It's only another couple of days and they'll be racing. And we'll all just move on.
That's right. We've already got, you know, the usual media cavalcade has started again, you know, on Twitter and Facebook. You know, everybody's at the race. And, I mean, I feel for the teams, I feel for the families, not just Jules Bianchi's family, but and the Bianchi family and his wider family, but all the families of all the other drivers and people involved in Formula One. It's dangerous. And it's all just happening again. It's, you know, it's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and we're all right back in it.
Yeah, I mean, even the drivers after the race, the people were trying to ask them about the results, and they said, look, it's just so, I'm so not into talking about this. This is not the headspace that I'm in at the moment. So it's even harder for us to talk about F1 in a fun and entertaining way when we have to report news like this. But I mean, we just didn't really know what to do, but we thought the best thing to do would be to just do the show as close to normal as we can. Obviously, it's not going to have the same energy as usual, but you know, we'd rather just push through and keep it going and keep Jules in our thoughts, and we think that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, and you know, continue to spread that message of keeping Jules in your thoughts and everybody's thoughts. And you know, participate. That's what I've really got out of it is to, you know, the only real reason this Formula One community is so engaging and so engaged and so fulfilling, I suppose, as a fan of the sport, is because people don't shy away from these types of issues, and there's been a really great debate and open lines of communication and people getting behind great causes and that kind of thing that, you know, we need to put ourselves out there as well.
So Jules is in our thoughts, but we are going to keep trying to move you on, and we'll try and put together something like a show for you. Obviously, if you wanted to look at F1 news outside of the accident, before the race, there was actually a really, really big headline. This was meant to be the headline, the dominating headline of the weekend. Sebastian Vettel has announced he's leaving Red Bull. He didn't need to say that he was going to Ferrari. Christian Horner took care of that for him. But he announced that after 6 years, four world championships, he's trading off, he's moving on.
Yeah, he's been racing under the Red Bull brand since age 12 or something like that, since your first sponsorship of karting days. Yeah. You know, I'm sure I'll get tweets about whether that's right or wrong. That's what I've heard. You know, we poo-pooed rumors earlier in the silly season to be like, come on, why would he go? But I think it's the next big step for him. He said as much, you know, to go to a different team and drag them out of you know, middle form and bring world championships back to Ferrari, much like Michael Schumacher did. And Alonso was hoping to do. It was just never surfed up the right machine.
It has a real Schumacher vibe to it, and we know Michael Schumacher was a big hero of his growing up.
Mm.
But I mean, the question mark is, if he goes to Ferrari, what's going to happen there? It's not really much of a scenario. We all kind of know Fernando Alonso is the one who's probably going to move.
Yeah, Fernando's, I mean, that's the next level of conjecture, but everybody seems to be just saying that like it's a done deal, that Fernando Alonso is off to McLaren, leaving Jenson Button supposedly without a race seat. I think, you know, to keep it at the speculation level, I think that's the most likely scenario.
Mm, yeah.
Jenson Button's racing career at McLaren is, I'm calling it, I think it's going to be done. You know, with four races left, we're all sorry to see him go. But I just don't know who, there are no other teams, it seems, I feel, that are in a position to pick up a driver like that. They all want young, marketable, invest in a guy, if he's not working out, shift through the next one type of drivers.
Definitely plenty of 16 to 25 year olds floating around doing nothing. I mean,
if I was a middling team, I'd rather pick up Jean-Eric Vergne than Button for a 1 year contract.
Yeah, valid. The other Red Bull seat, obviously Daniel Ricciardo's staying at Red Bull. The other Red Bull seat's going to be Daniil Kvyat. He's confirmed he's moving.
Yes, the all Dan team.
Coming up after only 1 year with Toro Rosso, and he's still pretty young.
And also not like the best year at Toro Rosso. Yeah. He's not lighting it up. Yeah. Like, he's doing a fine job.
Yeah, that's true.
Jean-Eric Vergne's out qualifying him. Or out, you know, you could say that they're arguably performing similarly. So I wonder if Jev, when that news came out, was like, oh, is there a chance maybe that I'll stay at Toro Rosso? Because that's the thing, there is now a spare seat at Toro Rosso, which everybody's saying is Carl Sainz Jr. Am I saying that right? Everybody was sort of waiting on a move from Alonso or Vettel, but it seems like all those drivers who were waiting for that to happen, the shuffle has happened without them. And they're all still in the same position.
Obviously, Max Verstappen's going to Toro Rosso next year, and he drove in FP1 for Suzuka, and he's actually going to drive in FP1 every race the rest of next
is he? This year. It's I didn't know be, that. Oh.
Yeah, he actually did really, really well. He was about half a second behind Kvyat, obviously in the sister car. But, I mean, I just think the idea that he'll get to the start of 2015, having driven on five racetracks, that's a pretty good jump start.
Incredible jump start. And you know, his session was cut short by an engine issue of some form, bit of blue smoke, you never like to see that. But he had genuine pace, and all the right people are talking about him. Niki Lauda's calling him the next Senna. You know, people are saying all the right things. And say what you want about Red Bull, but their young driver program, when they find the right talent and the right person, it delivers race winners, you know. So
he looks impressive.
I wonder if Kvyat's feeling a little bit of pressure. Because, you know, he got upgraded after 1 year. How many years has Verstappen got to wait at Toro Rosso, you know, before he jumps up a seat? So, you know.
Who knows?
It seems like the right time to be the number one driver at Red Bull for Daniel Ricciardo. But it's definitely, you just have to look at the history of Toro Rosso and their driver program. They've been through now 10 drivers, and they've only had two real race winners. It's a trial by fire at Red Bull.
Last piece of big news that I had was the seizure of assets from Caterham, or more accurately from One MRT, which seems to have some loose association with Caterham.
Mm.
Their former owners anyway, Tony Fernandez. But I mean, there was a list of assets released by the bailiff saying, hey, we've got all this stuff and you can buy it if you want. And it's like an F1 test car, an F1 simulator, like spanners and just everything you could think of that
are
would be an
F1
garage.
Are they branded spanners? Like, do they have Caterham like engraved on the spanners? Like, that's what I want.
Like, the HRT crossed out and then Caterham written underneath.
Yeah, indeed, Sharpie.
Yeah.
Dave's Caterham spanner.
I was thinking the only thing missing probably from like a car garage was maybe like a centerfold magazine or something, but I don't even know if Caterham makes those.
Just pin-ups for people's lockers.
Yeah.
But I mean, that whole Caterham thing, did you see that like Caterham Group had to put out a press release saying like, hey, look, Caterham Group is this thing. We make those kit cars racing cars and like we've got orders till the end of next year. Don't worry about us shareholders. We're fine. This Caterham F1 team, now it has the same name and they're using it under license. But they're making us look really bad and their financial woes aren't our financial woes.
The rumours were that staff weren't even going to the race and they probably wouldn't even be racing this weekend. So it was pretty important for them to say, we are a modular company and it's only one side of things that has an issue.
Well, that's what I took out of the press release. They aren't... The Caterham F1 isn't part of Caterham Group.
Yeah.
They're using the name under licence. Talk about a PR nightmare. Imagine if it was like, oh, look, now we're Nike, but Nike F1, they are not us.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Nothing to do with us.
Yeah. It's crazy. The whole situation's a bit crazy. Poor Caterham. Who's going to swoop in and buy them next year?
Coke?
Coke F1. Formula One.
I don't know.
I'd get behind that.
That was all the news that I had. Unless you have anything else you want to add, we could probably move on.
No, let's move on. Let's keep it shuffling.
Let's try and look at what we can in the Japanese Grand Prix through the spectrum of predictions.
This moment came to me in a dream.
Sometimes it's so close, it's scary.
Predictions.
It's scary.
I can feel it down in my lungs.
Got heaps of like audio predictions this week, I feel
Loads.
Like.
Loads. Absolutely loads. Now, the winning combination that you want is pole for Rosberg, win for Hamilton and 10th for Perez. And I can tell you, a bunch of people got really close. Two people who didn't get really close are named Zach and Rod.
Yeah, we suck. We
no
are
good.
Well, I mean...
I was on Ricciardo for pole. You were on Grosjean for 10th?
Yeah, look, the Grosjean was 15th.
Interesting.
You know, like, I feel like he's coming into some good form. It's a pity that good form for Lotus is 10th. But everybody's been whispering about, you know, it's Perez. Perez is the number 10 guy, much like Jean-Éric Vergne, I think it was last year. Perez
is
the man.
He's the Jev this year. Yeah. He definitely came through. A bunch of people have Perez. But maybe we'll kick it off first, though, with audio predictions. So first up, we've got Roars. He's, you know, just keeping his role going. I don't even know how many races in a row this is now. But it's got to be a lot.
Hi guys, Rawls here with predictions for the Japanese Grand Prix. Lewis Hamilton's going to take pole position. And then the win in the Typhoon, it's going to be the boat himself, Valtteri Bottas. And then in 10th place, K-Mag's going to do it again. I just have a feeling. Good luck. Enjoy the race. It's a normal time for you people, so have fun.
Yeah. He said the race was at normal time for us. Yeah, not too shabby. Only 1 hour difference between us and them. So in F1 terms, that's actually really good.
It took me totally by surprise. Like I had organized to have people over like on Sunday afternoon and then I had to like finagle and shift things around and then luckily that got cancelled because I was like, oh my god, there's a Formula One race on at 5 p.m.
Guys, hurry
and
up.
We just got daylight saving so it was sunny and stuff. Oh, it was amazing. Why can't all the races be on at 5 o'clock on a Sunday?
It suited us down to the ground. Yeah. One person that didn't suit down to the ground was Sarah.
Hi, Super Licensed friends. This is Sarah from Boston in the USA. I'm going to give you my predictions of the voice memo this weekend. In preparation for staying up basically for the next 72 hours because of different sports. Yeah, this should be a good time. I think for pole, I'm going to go with Rosberg. You know what? Every time I predict him to win, though, something terrible happens. So I'm going to go with Ricciardo for the win. And then for 10th, let's go Hülkenberg. So that seems like a safe bet. All right, that's it. Have a good weekend.
She stayed up 72 hours watching sports. Have you ever done that?
I mean, not deliberately and not probably not for sports. Maybe for like party.
Maybe,
like,
for
maybe
the Tour
for
de
parties.
France or something. Do you sit up watching that?
Yeah. I mean, years ago, the Tour de France was on at the same time as... Like Tour de France and Wimbledon and everything are all on at the same time. I think if you can match cricket up at the same time and Formula 1...
Yeah, sometimes, yeah.
You know, if all the planets, sporting planets align...
More predictions, audio predictions now from Thomas. Let's see what he has to say.
Hi guys, and I'm Thomas, and today I will predict for the 2014 Japanese Grand Prix. For pole position, I think I'll go with Lewis Hamilton because it's quite a speedy circuit. And for first place, I think Daniel Ricciardo will take the win because in Singapore in the last race, he was pretty good. And in 10th place, Sergio Perez, because consistently he finished near 10th. Enjoy the race!
Yeah, Perez is consistently near 10th. He was very consistently near 10th this week.
I do have to say, I listened to Thomas's prediction a couple of times this week when I was feeling down, because just like that level of fun and just sheer joy. Thomas, thank you so much for your predictions. Keep them coming. They're amazing.
There's only one audio prediction that was funner than that one, let's just say. That was Innocent Steph.
Hi guys, Innocent Steph here, back for another week. You may hear the lovely sounds of my favourite J-pop star Kyoru Pamyu Pamyu playing in the background. This week, for the Japanese Grand Prix, I'm predicting Lewis Hamilton will put his car on pole and take the victory. Yes, I'm going back-to-back weeks. Go Hamilton! And for 10th, I'm going to say Jenson Button, because Japan loves Jenson and I love Jenson too. Have a great race, guys. Cheers.
Love the J-pop, Steph. And joke's on you, I do know who Keanu Perry Perry is. So
take that.
That's not his real name.
We've been training a little bit of Asia pop stuff on a on a weekend morning.
Sure.
So we're getting involved.
But that's the audio predictions done. Let's see who stands on the prediction podium this week. That's 3-2-1. Let's see who got the closest to getting the pole win and 10th right. Third step of the podium this week, with prediction of Rosberg for pole, Hamilton to win, and Vern for 10th. He very naturally came 9th. Mike Nickus, he's again on the podium. He took it out just not that long ago.
He's slotting him in. You know, he's his first. He's,
he is a threat.
He's only, the only way is down. So continue to push.
Standing next to Mike on the podium, on the other side of the rostrum. Second place, Ian, with an audio prediction. Let's have a listen to what he said.
Hey guys, Ian here, predicting for Suzuka. So I think Nico Rosberg is going to have a good weekend. He's going to get pole on Saturday, then win the race on Sunday. And for 10th, I'm going to go with Sergio Perez. Enjoy the race.
But yeah, Rosberg for pole and to win, he was only one away. Otherwise, he would have had a clean sweep.
Oh, so close.
But getting into the top step, this is where it gets actually really interesting. We have, with a prediction of Hamilton, and Perez, as close as you can get, really, because you pick the winner, and 10th.
Yeah.
Joint winners.
Two?
Joint. These guys had the exact same prediction. Whoa. One of you should have had to go home and change. Andrew Roguska and Jeff Peterson. Well done, guys.
Wow, nice one.
You got the closest with the mostest.
That's great work. They should take each other out for a beer.
Yeah, you need to split to each other.
You know, like you just get, you know, you guys are best mates, obviously. Soulmates, if you will.
You're on the same mental wavelength, so.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, maybe they're colluding. Maybe our fans are getting together without us noticing. The super people are getting together and going, hey, I'll split the winnings. Like, winnings. Let's split them together. Like, I'll tweet this and you tweet that. And if we split them up together.
I feel a mutiny coming on. If only we gave out prizes, I'd believe that.
If we gave out a prize every week, we'd be penniless. Broke. Super broke.
We've done predictions, Zach. Maybe we should get into the race.
Let's talk about the race.
When all the cars are in position over their sensors in the track, they will trigger those lights. Look, but never stare. 4, 5, go!
Schumacher surely goes fastest, and that is a brilliant time.
Some action further down Grosjean, trying to go around the outside of Rosberg.
Michael Schumacher just goes past me now!
Oh no! The Force Indians hit each other!
Alonso has done a great lap. We have to respond.
Formula One world champion, Lewis Hamilton.
It looked very easy, was it?
Oh yeah, it was so easy, I can't believe it.
Quite a very angry Mark Webber.
So obviously there was a race. Obviously the big talking point, we've dealt with it, we all feel pretty crap about it. We all feel deflated about it, but there was a race and there's a few issues and things that we can talk about. So
yeah, I mean, let's...
May as well do that.
We got super typhoons.
Yeah.
We've got...
Who even knew a super typhoon is a thing?
Oh, you know, it feels like something from like a Jerry Bruckheimer produced
film. Yeah, oh, it's like a Sharknado thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's Sharknado 2.0, super typhoon, you know, but with hammerhead sharks.
Obviously, the race started, though, but it started behind safety car went for a couple of laps and then they red flagged it and said, this is too wet, this is crazy.
Yeah, and it was almost like you're watching it at home and you're sort of watching on the screen and you're like, it looks perfectly reasonable. And then they get a different camera angle and you're like, how does anybody see anything at all right now?
We don't
now?
Get those nice light balanced camera angles. You get that one that's just a standard view and it's virtually dark.
Like it's from the pit lane or something down the strat and you're like, how does... I wouldn't drive home in that. If it was after work, like how are they going to drive a Formula One car around it?
Yeah.
So, you know, we red flagged the race. We personally, Rod and Zach,
you and I, yeah, we decided said, it was too dangerous.
It's too wet. Call it off.
No dice.
But then, you know, we got a restart under safety car and then when we got, you know, we basically got a relatively rain free race for what you would probably say 40 out of 50, how many laps.
By the time they started racing, Jensen Button was straight into the pits like, this is dry enough for inters. I don't need to be on wets anymore. That's how good the track is now.
Yeah, but those first, I mean, I think I wrote down here that we lost a few laps behind the safety car on restart because it was pretty ready to go. Like it was pretty dry. They could have gone a few more laps less, earlier than they thought. But I suppose they just wanted to make it as safe as possible. And that's a redundant point now.
But yeah, I mean, it was a wettish race all the way through. Obviously, it got worse in certain periods. But I thought before the start of the race that the rain would definitely help Lewis Hamilton. Seems like it did. He didn't have as many issues with the car. Rosberg was complaining about oversteer, and that seems to have cost him because Hamilton could get right on him at the end of the straight. But then coming through those, you know, first couple of corners one and two, that was where Hamilton got the move done. And once Hamilton was in front, he was able to pull away, whether it's just his experience in wet driving, whether it's just his style, his confidence.
I think I think he has a faster car.
Well, like, how can that be when the setup's the same?
Because the setups aren't, like, yes, the parts are the same, but the setups aren't exactly the same because two drivers have different driving styles.
That's true.
You know, I would argue that for the first half of the season, Ricciardo had a faster car than Vettel as well. Like, he was a better driver at those races, but... Recently, Hamilton's has been faster and with a faster setup and a faster car.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say it won't change, but right now Hamilton has full belief in his ability and in the machine that's surrounding him, and he's going to be really hard to stop. And he was unstoppable this weekend.
Yeah,
which just makes you go, you know, upon reflection, you go, why can't he get it sorted for qualifying? You know, where's that one lap pace?
If he could do that, it would be, you know, not a boring week, a boring end of the season, but it would be a dominant end to the season.
Yeah.
And it would be a blowout, which is actually, I was thinking about this the other day. Double points in Abu Dhabi, everyone hates it, it's stupid. I really want the championship to go one of two ways. Either someone pulls out a lead so great that it doesn't matter, or the lead is so close that it doesn't matter. It could go, it works either way.
Yeah, what you don't want is that, yeah, you know, you're not asking for that, like, 30 point deficit to be caught up because of double points.
Yeah, I don't want it to be decided by the double points-ness of the double points race.
Double points-ness.
In Abu double points.
Yeah.
But Hamilton won. That's the big takeaway from the race if you need one at the end.
Yeah.
You got Rosberg in second, you got Vettel third, Ricciardo was classified as fourth, Jensen Button fifth. In a very confusing...
finish to the race.
Yeah. Let's call out a safety car. Let's red flag the race. Everyone pulls into the pits. The results taken from...
Not the three quarters.
Not the last time that the flag was flown, but the result from the previous time.
Yeah.
So people who saw the safety car and pulled in, they obviously fell further back, but then they were promoted further forward again. If it wasn't confusing enough with what was happening with the drivers, the result was even confusing.
Well, that goes back to the start of the race as well, when they did the laps behind the safety car to start the race before it was red flagged. We were all like, why didn't they just stop on the grid?
Yeah.
And they stopped in the pit lane because if they'd stopped on the grid, they would have stopped short of the start finish line. But by stopping inside the pit lane, they all progressed past safety car, went past the start finish line, meaning they had done two full complete laps, which means they got points.
They get a points result.
And upon reflection, I swear that Bernie Eccleston and Charlie Whiting would have been like, regardless, get them out there for two laps.
Mm-hmm.
We are not walking away from this race without points. Mm-hmm. Get them out there for two laps, see if this rain stops, red flag it, and then see if we can start up again. What about Alonso? Just, you know, first lap after the restart, loses drive, and no poor guy, done.
Yeah, another rare reliability problem for the Ferrari. I think with Kimi Raikkonen falling out of the points, he's in about 12th. It's like the first time Ferrari haven't scored points for like 5 years or something crazy like that.
Yeah, they just... you wonder what all the guys are doing over there. Like, what are they working on? Are they all
next year's car?
Are they all on Facebook? Like, I don't know. I got no idea. I feel, you know, I'm sure they're working their butts off, but they just can't. They just can't get it together.
No,
you know, same as McLaren, they just can't get the right setup and the right car, and can't get anything going in their corner.
Maybe Alonso will have better luck at Force India next year.
I mean, speaking of McLaren, though, Jenson Button. Just, it's so funny, you know, you hear him on the radio going, it's too wet to race, and I can't see anything. And you're like, you're the best guy in these situations. Like, you could, really, if anybody, you should be telling everybody that it's ready to go and then just dominate. And by coming in on inters right at the start, definitely the right move.
Yep.
And then later, when he came in a little bit earlier and caught everybody out and moved up into fourth from basically 11th or 12th, you know, it was just outthinking a lot of the other races this week.
He had a great race on strategy at a race where it was probably going to favour him too, because he's got web feet.
Exactly. You could, in fact, if they were all wet races, I'd be putting him in. I'd be putting in top fives.
Yeah.
For locking in top fives for Button for the rest of the season if they were all wet. If the Bernie Eccleston sprinkles come out. Yeah.
He had a good scrap with Daniel Ricciardo. And Daniel Ricciardo, I thought, had a pretty good race. Made a few overtaking moves when he had to. Around the outside of the S's, around Felipe Massa.
Yeah.
Copped that, son.
Yeah, Vettel was the same. They went through Q3 and they just went, we know it's definitely going to super typhoon tomorrow. Let's set up the car for wet. So yes. It's set up wet straight away. If there hadn't been, I reckon the Red Bulls, both of them, would have been a little bit more. They had pace towards the end of the race, and they both drivers said this, that you feel like if the race had sort of been uninterrupted and stayed a little bit more wet, they would have been right up there with the Mercs.
They were challenging. They were poised to do well.
Yeah, they when it really came down to a fast, like toe-to-toe fastest lap in the wet, I reckon the Red Bulls and the Mercedes were very, very similar. You could just see the way, as soon as it got into the high downforce corners, God, the way they drove around the Williams, and you just go, there's a car that didn't set up for the wet. Those white cars have got nothing.
Yeah.
But then as soon as you get on the straight, you can see their noticeable lack of power.
I'm glad you mentioned the Mercs again, because do you remember when Hamilton was starting the challenge, Rosberg, he actually was getting a little bit squiggly a few times, and then there was one shot where he ran a little bit wide on a corner, but we got a great side-on shot of his car, and you could see the brake discs were glowing. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
And I was like,
that.
He's gone off the track and his brakes are gone. That's Hamilton's race over.
Yeah.
But it must have just been a temporary weird little thing.
Well, you can just, yeah, if you really slam it on them and it gets a little bit caught on the brake pad and they, in the right light and the right, yeah. You know, look, we've seen Hamilton's brakes on fire in the pits as he's driving off. You know, it's just
lit up and it glowed like a glow stick or something. I tweeted like, it looked like when the DeLorean hits 88 and everyone was like, all right, you're on Twitter, you're doing stuff. Sorry if we weren't tweeting as much as usual. Zach and I watched the race together. We were talking to each other. We should have been talking to you guys more.
What we need is an assistant when we watch it together to tweet on our behalf.
We need that.
I wonder if we could outsource that. Just set up a camera and then as we say stuff, people can be like, same more things. You know, we could probably just live. Next time we do that, we should probably just live show. We
should live stream.
Live stream something. Put that up there. We'll get 3 viewers.
That was the main points I had from the race. Have you got anything left on your list?
Not really. I mean, yeah, when are Williams going to get their race strategy sorted out?
I think they were probably down on race pace also because of the wet conditions. But, you know, if they have a dry race and if they get their strategy together, they're going to have much happier days.
Yeah, I hope so. I really hope so, because I want to see Bottas win a race. I want to see Massa win a race now.
Yeah,
I just want anything. You know, those two are locked up for next year. I hope they both stay and that team just continues to build.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny when Ericsson spun behind the safety car. Poor guy, that sucks.
Oh, dude.
surprisingly, there weren't too many retirements, if we're going to talk about those, just overall for a wet race. Not as many spins as I expected under safety car and during that middle part of the race. It's always troubling when there's the dry line is appearing and people try and overtake and find grip and try and change things up and they get on the wet lines. But God, that track's amazing. I don't understand why we just don't have more amazing tracks like that all the time. Like, if you sit down and build a racetrack right now, you're like, yep, I want an under, a bit where it crosses over each other. I want, you know, I want line fast 190 kilometer an hour turns. I want everything. Yeah.
Martin Brundle was talking about, even though the track's in a figure eight, you don't ever feel like you're doing a figure eight. You just feel like the track, it just keeps going. Mm. And then before you know, you're starting again.
We've talked about, I feel like we've covered everything that I wanted to get it. Out of the race. How do you think it sets up the final four races?
I mean, obviously, a win for Rosberg would have pulled the lead back closer than it is now, obviously 10 points between Rosberg and Hamilton. A half points win for Rosberg would have made it as close as possible, half a point. How brilliant would that have been?
Exactly. But now that Hamilton's out by more than a race win,
Rosberg, wait, first and second.
If they're going to, they've won and two 8 races now. Barring any technical reliability issues, they should 1 and 2 the rest of the season. I mean, if I'm Toto,
that's
what I'm expecting.
I don't think Rosberg can afford to wait until Abu Dhabi. He needs to string together 2 or 3 wins.
Yeah, I wonder. Let me put this out there: does Rosberg leave Mercedes if he doesn't win the championship this year?
He's signed already. I don't think he will. I don't think he will. He's in that situation like a Mark Webber, where you're like, look, I could go and drive for Ferrari, but my best chance, even if it's only a 20% chance, my best chance of a driver's championship is right here. I think he'll stay at least next year. If he still isn't in a good position to win next year, or the turmoil in the team turns him inside out, he might think about leaving, but certainly next year he'll be there.
They seem to be, like, Rosberg and Hamilton didn't, like, they were shaking hands, and they, I mean, it was a tough time, obviously. Like, they weren't in, they were not up to their usual, they wouldn't have had the emotional energy to,
yeah, that's a good
to
way
be
to put
involved
it.
Like that. But that was more heartening for me to see everybody put that aside.
And I think, though, obviously the crash has put everything in perspective as well. I mean, they asked Rosberg, how do you feel about coming second to your championship rival today? And he's like, it's good, it's fine, who cares?
Yeah, Jesus.
I'm not thinking about this at all.
It's amazing that I'm standing on the podium. That's all.
Anyways, before the race, I thought this might be a little bit of an extra little thing that we could throw in the show. I actually did a little chat, a Skype chat with an F1 journalist, Kate Walker.
Tell me about Kate Walker. What do you know about Kate Walker? What do people need to know?
Delightful. She's hilarious. Ooh. There were a lot of off-color jokes about the drivers that were made, and I didn't include them in this little edit, but because I couldn't, I couldn't in good conscience include them because
just didn't jive.
It wasn't in the let's go, let's stop period, but I'm definitely going to get her back on because she's hilarious. This is obviously recorded before racing started, so it's we have a chipper mood. She's on her hotel Wi-Fi, so it's obviously dodgy. Super dodgy. I'm really sorry. The audio quality starts off pretty hit and miss. It does get better. It gets better. Like all things, Zach, it gets better. I think Barack Obama said that.
Look, we're real road warriors this week. Like, we're recording... What? Do you want me to say where we're recording? We're recording at university library tonight. Yeah. Because we are both hammered with stuff. Like, Rod's got scrappy interviews that are entertaining and fun, and I'm looking forward to hearing them. And,
yeah.
Here we are, we're putting out shows.
So if you can hear people in the other room learning Cantonese, that's okay. It's because we're in a learning institution.
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to say is the audio this week's probably crap. It's about to get a little bit crapper, but then it'll get a little bit better. All of her insights are really interesting, and I really think it's a really interesting chat. And like I say, I really hope we can get her back on again. But what I started with was by asking her what she knew about, what she'd heard about the traps of the F1 paddock, about F1 dipping its toe into the waters of social media.
What I do know from having spoken to a couple of the paddock PR off the record is that some of them had discussions with people who work for Bernie about broadening social media engagement. And so step one was the introduction of the hashtag in Singapore last week and entreaties to join the conversation. And then step two, I mean, you were in Singapore, you saw presumably on the massive circuit TVs, the way that they have people doing interviews in the paddock and, FOM are recording and broadcasting loads and loads of stuff that doesn't make it onto the world TV. So the teams are, as far as I've been told, going to be given selected bits of the cutting room floor footage, of the circuit footage, with a view to promoting little mini F1 movies, perhaps on Instagram, perhaps on Twitter, perhaps on Vine.
I mean, there's obviously a reason why the drivers are doing that, and it develops their brand and it helps monetize their brand. But why does Formula One seem so short-sighted in understanding that by cracking down on the broadcasting, they're actually kind of hamstringing themselves?
So at some point before 2006, 2007, Bernie did a massive investment in digital TV that would enable people to do onboard camera and viewing and that sort of thing. And he spent a lot of money, never made any money back, I think lost a lot of money. And so since then, he's been quite wary of either being too early with emerging technologies or doing any investment in emerging technology. And I think we've now got to the point where he realizes that while we can't make money out of social media, if we don't do social media, we can't grow the fan base.
You're right that it coincided with the Singapore Grand Prix. Obviously, the Singapore Grand Prix services the fans really, really well. But I wonder whether the introduction of Formula E and this seeming change of heart on from Formula One management, whether there's any coincidence in that.
I think so. You know, I mean, Formula E is, as we all know, very different to Formula One. But from the outset, they have been pushing fan engagement. They've been pushing social media. And I think Bernie has seen the positive effect that that has had and realised that actually we don't need to worry quite so much about getting burned. You know, creating the conversation on Twitter isn't going to earn him any money, but it's not going to cost him any money. Releasing bits of footage, again, it might cost a small amount of money to edit things that would have been on the cutting room floor otherwise.
Even though a lot of people seem to agree that it's just general common sense that Formula One embraces new media and social media, do you think it'll actually be enough to get young people excited in the sport again? Or are things like gimmicky rules like double points actually what's driving people away in the first place?
I don't know. I mean, double points, it's ridiculous. And Bernie's definitely
that. The one thing that's for sure is that the fans are getting shortchanged at the moment. Obviously, you would have seen that Red Bull tried to release a video recently celebrating Daniel Ricciardo's maiden victory, and it was a bit of a shambles. They had to animate still videos, but also you've got the FOM cracking down on websites that even use F1 in their title. I mean, even speaking to me, you said I can't do it from the track because that counts as broadcasting. Aren't these the real issues that F1 needs to be addressing at the moment?
For me personally, I went from a fan to a reporter in 2 years, and a big part of that was how excited I was by the fan communities on the internet, by the information and access I was getting on Twitter. It was these windows into the hidden world that made me decide that I wanted to go from a fan to professional.
You know, you follow along, you feel like you're part of a community. And then to be in that community, you want to be in the grandstand, surrounded by tifosi and people in Red Bull shirts. And, you know, anything, in my opinion, anything that feeds the passion might not make any money now, that will keep the sport healthy enough that his wallet will stay fat in future.
Yeah, I mean, I think even looking at your article, the title Old Dog, Old Tricks really tells the story. And I think that, I mean, I'd be interested to hear what you think about this, but when the tobacco advertising money left Formula One, Bernie seemed to be chasing the really big financial whales. He was harpooning these big whales to bring money to the sport. And as they start to die out, those whales, he has to chase bigger and bigger ones. And we end up having races at Russia. We end up looking at places like Azerbaijan to go racing. But what happens when we run out of those big targets? Will it be too late then to put the brakes on and throw it in reverse and start embracing all these things?
Yeah, I really don't know. I mean, selfishly, I'm actually quite excited about Azerbaijan as a Grand Prix, because it's not somewhere I ever would have thought to travel and I like seeing the world. And I know quite a lot of people in F1 feel the same. I think, you know, cause I'm Bahrain. I know that it's a political hot potato, but I've always enjoyed my stays in Bahrain. And it's not a country I'd heard of until they got a Grand Prix, let alone somewhere I would have thought to visit. You know, there are lots of little pockets of the world that F1 introduces you to. But then I'm part of the gilded community who actually gets to visit them in person. I'm not watching the empty grandstands on TV. What I find worrying, because I think that there are always going to be territories that want to promote themselves. You know, I mean, who's to say that in 10 years we won't be talking about the Grand Prix of Tuvalu? Is that how you pronounce it? Tuvalu, Tuvalau, one of the Pacific Islands.
Yeah, no idea. I'll look it up and I'll dub it in later. It's okay.
Yeah, learn the pronunciation of Wikipedia. What concerns me is the World Health Organization hit list of sports sponsorship. Have you heard about this?
No, not at all.
They have the World Health Organization has a list of categories that they don't think should be allowed to be involved in big sponsorship. Tobacco was number one. They've succeeded, as we know. Alcohol's next on the list, which is why all of the alcohol brands are jumping into F1 now while they've still got time. Then we've got fast food, junk food, sugary sweets, And this isn't something that's just going to impact Formula One. I mean, if you look at the Olympics, they've got McDonald's and Coca-Cola as their big sponsors. I think the World Cup also have Coca-Cola as a major sponsor. When we've exhausted the alcohol and we can't do the sugar and we can't do the fast food, where are the teams going to go for sponsors, you know?
E-cigarettes.
E-cigarettes are weird because they're actually illegal in some territories. But I think they're... You know, like it's. I think even in Australia, don't you? I think your health organisation branch of the government is very, very concerned about long-term studies in e-cigarettes.
It's definitely a blurred line at the moment.
But you know, so when this happens, it's not just that we're going to have the teams fighting with each other for sponsors. We're going to be fighting the Olympics. We're going to be fighting the World Cup. And it's something that I think is actually a really, really big problem for sport generally coming down the line. And we may have 5-10 years before the WHO manages to tick each item off their list. But, you know, where do you go? Oh, yeah, are we going to get to the point where the only sponsors that we can have are, say, software brands, clothing manufacturers, perfumes, cosmetics, you know, those sorts of goods? You know, because we've got airlines at the moment. Well, what happens if Greenpeace says that, you know, they're going to work on stopping airline sponsorship because of the impact on climate change? You know, we already don't have the best... Well, we have a much worse reputation than we deserve when it comes to being environmentally friendly. You know, our carbon footprint is nowhere near as bad as people assume it is. You know, and so if you don't have sponsors... You know, who's to say that we're not going to get teams kickstarting sponsorship? Well, if we've not got a place in social media, if we've not got an existing platform and a fan base that we can touch for kickstarting, where do you go? I am very, very concerned about the long-term viability of Formula One financially and from a fan perspective. I don't know where the money's going to come from. I don't know where the fan base is going to come from. So the least of my concerns is where we're going to end up racing.
Obviously, you need to keep television rights and selling them all over the world. But the idea that kids these days are using their phones, they're using their tablets. But if Formula One could sell a package deal where you could just watch little packaged pieces, maybe you could even do them, but you get to watch all the sessions on whatever screen you happen to have in front of you, and you buy a subscription for a year rather than relying on being in front of a television, that would be actually a big source of fundraising for the sport. But also, people won't be switching off and they won't be not tuning into a race because they couldn't watch it.
Well, I actually, when Tata signed their comms deal, I thought that was the logical next step, was for Bernie to go, right, nobody can afford my broadcasting rights anymore. You know, I mean, because if you look at Sky in the UK, they spend God knows how much money and don't get 1 million viewers a race. And yet everybody watches their feed illegally on the internet. But I asked Paul Hembury about this in Singapore, maybe? Maybe it was before that. I don't know, a press conference. Because they're a sponsor as well as a supplier. And as a sponsor, they don't track torrenting or downloads or anything like that. They don't include that as eyeballs when they're trying to decide whether or not to carry on sponsoring. So I would imagine that most brands also aren't tracking torrenting or anything like that. I think that the logical thing for FOM to do, now that they've got Tata on side, is to wait for broadcasting contracts to expire, do the package themselves, and sell it direct to the user, like you say, on a range of platforms. You know, maybe even come up with a share deal with a team. So if you buy your sponsorship package through McLaren, say, you get more footage of the McLarens in the race than you do of the Ferraris, although obviously you get enough to be able to see, you know, the story of the race as a whole.
Yeah. I mean, it makes common sense to people like us, but I mean, we're 60 years younger than the guys making the decisions, so there you go.
Exactly. You know, we grew up using these technologies and seeing... what I would love to do is I'd love to get my 16-year-old cousin involved and ask her what she would do, because I know that she's heard of technology that is, you know, way beyond me.
I can't even get a live stream organised. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's when you sit there Googling illegal download.
And sometimes I put F1 and a question mark at the end and my girlfriend just laughs at me like, that's silly. Why are you putting a question mark in there? But it works. So are you optimistic then for the future of the sport and having a job in 10 years?
Well, I'm a glass half full kind of girl. So, yes, because I always like to see the positives. But I do think that anybody who is putting all of their eggs in an F1 basket at the moment would be better off considering a little bit of diversification just in case. You know, in the way we're looking at, you know, right now, the fact that we're looking at the possibility of 3-car teams. And the thing about having customer cars is it would actually save Bernie an awful lot of money if teams are buying customer cars, because customer cars would not be eligible for the Constructors' Championship, and the Constructors' Championship is where prize fund money comes from. So if he's got 4 teams selling customer cars to 8 other teams, he only has to give money to 4 teams. The other 8 can, well, I mean, they can try their luck getting sponsorship and hoovering around no points at the back of the grid. Oh, I mean, it's ridiculous. Only the thing that I put in the piece that we were mentioning at the beginning about how the teams are going to have to reduce their 70% stake. No, they don't. You might reduce the amount of money you give them, but percentages don't change. It's just that the amount of money that the percent is of changes.
It was a great circular argument that said if you reduce your percentage, then it'll cost less money to run a race, and then more people will come, and then you'll get more money. You see, you reduce your percentage, get more money. That's Bernie logic in action.
I don't think he thinks that anybody has done basic arithmetic. You know?
Well, they don't teach it in school anymore, Kate. That's the problem.
Damn it. See, this is how you can tell I'm old. I had math class.
Not at all.
Yeah. No, I'd like to think that Formula One is going to have a rude and healthy future. But we had an interesting chat in the press room today about the last time that Formula One, well, before it was Formula One, in fact, went down this kind of road. And if you look at pre-war Grand Prix racing, in the 30s, when Hitler and the German government then invested, well, not bajillions, but in currency at the time, an awful lot of money in Mercedes and Auto Union, it was impossible for the other teams to compete. Even the likes of Alfa Romeo and Maserati, who'd been, you know, heavy hitters in the early 1930s. And basically, the only reason that Grand Prix racing didn't die a death then was because the Second World War happened and all racing had to stop. Then after the Second World War, when people were rebuilding themselves, you didn't have the same level of government investment. And that's why we were able to have the history of Formula One that we've had with sort of garagistes and constructors. And now we're creating a similar situation where you've got heavy hitters. You know, we've got the inequitable share of the spoils from FOM. You've got heavy hitters like Mercedes and Red Bull who can keep throwing money at problems. And we're already in a scenario. I think we've got, is it a 28 or 29 race streak since anyone other than Red Bull or Mercedes won a race? That's lunacy, you know, and it's pointless anybody else turning up. And if we are not careful, we are going to get to the sort of point that we had in the mid to late 1930s, where only 2 teams are turning up. And that's when the sport really does die.
No, I think you've hit the nail right on the head there. And a bit of diversity would be really nice. Let's hope this weekend in Japan we have a new winner. I'm going for, Force India. Why not?
Yeah, well, it's like, do you remember 2009 in Spa? Was it Fisichella got his podium and he nearly got the win?
Yeah, he nearly got
that. That was the last time we've seen an underdog properly succeed. I mean, Sergio Perez has done a couple of good things with Sauber and Force India, but, you know, Sauber had a great car that year. Force India have become much more of a big hitter than they were in 2009. Before that was Seb in Toro Rosso Monza 2008.
Yeah, that seems like an age ago.
Yeah.
I guess you got Maldonado a couple of years ago, but that was a fluke.
Yeah, that was very, very much a fluke. You know, I mean, if Lewis had stayed on pole, I don't think Maldonado would have won that race. You know, he benefited from the team's error there.
Yeah.
From the other team's error. to say that he didn't do a bloody good job, I just wonder where he's been at every race since Barcelona 2012. There's obviously another guy in the car now.
Well, I mean, he's already the joke of F1, so I think that's a great note for us to finish up on. Thank you very much, Kate. Could you let people know where they could follow you and find out a bit more about you?
Absolutely. You can read me on ESPNF1.com, on Crash.net, and on Motorsport.com. plus in GP Week magazine, and I have just started Instagramming at F1 Kate.
Hey!
Yeah. So far, there's lots of pictures of sunsets in Bali and silly things in Tokyo, but that will improve.
Well, I look forward to your food phase, and then I look forward to your I'm sick of Instagramming food phase.
Yeah, yeah. I've deliberately not Instagrammed any food yet, although I have taken photos of some meals.
So, yeah, thanks very much, Kate. It was a really, really, I had a ball chatting to you, and like I said, we'll try and get you on again. Probably next year.
Jealous that you got to daughter. I'm jealous.
So that was, I guess, Super License F1 chat for the week.
Oh, you're going to have to build a new bumper.
What are we
chat
for
the week. Super License chat for the week.
Well, I don't know how anyone can do better than that.
Look, they probably can't.
No,
it's no good. Do you want me to float a haiku in your direction to perk up the mood a little bit? Or do you want me to... Do you want to just go into a preview for Sochi, which is right around the corner? I'm going to leave the ball in your court.
Oh, boy. I guess let's try the haiku. Let's try some haikus, some F1 haikus.
All right.
Some F1 haikus. Let's see if this will just take our mind off things for a little bit and, you know, reassociate F1 with good times.
Super quiz.
Super quiz.
The first question is for you, Karl Marx.
Okay, so Super License haikus. Haikus.
I said it, now you're saying it.
A haiku is a poem that goes five syllables, seven syllables, five syllables.
Mm-hmm.
Quite often have what is called the cutting moment, where you juxtapose two ideas, you know, whether it's hot and cold or day and night, something like that. Look, I can't guarantee that I've done that every time. They're hard to write in. It's hard to write. They're meant to be nature-based as well.
Yes, yes.
Like, this is the loosest, most westernized version of a haiku.
Yeah.
Have you seen that you know, the movie review haikus? Like, they don't... They're about as loosely haiku as these
are. I imagine this is like if you ask the sixth grader, write a haiku, this is what he comes up with.
Yeah, because he's a big Formula One fan, that's all he knows. So these are...
Sure, yes.
They are haikus in the sense that they are 5-7-5 syllables.
And then the premise is they're about an F1 driver, and I have to try and guess which driver.
Yes, based on now what I have said. So I'm just going to start with the first one.
Let's do it.
Here we go. Unexpected pace. A sun dimmed by a helmet. Ice runs through his veins.
Okay. A sun dimmed by a helmet. I don't know what that's got to do with. Ice through his veins. Probably Valtteri Bottas.
No. A sun dimmed by his helmet. He's so bright and fun. And then you put the helmet on it and he's like the Iceman. Like he's not the Iceman. It's not Kimi Raikkonen. We did that last time. But he becomes apparently becomes a different, quite a focused driver.
No idea.
Daniel Ricciardo.
Okay.
Unexpected pace. He's had unexpected pace this year.
He smiled.
A sun dimmed, as bright as a sun. His smile. Maybe we should have worked out on that. Look, they're not perfect.
Yeah,
okay, let's see if we can get this one.
Okay.
Deep roots now severed. Matador replaced by bull. Wings replaced by hooves.
Matador replaced by bull.
Well, wings replaced with hooves.
It's got to be Sebastian Vettel.
It is Sebastian Vettel. I'm glad you saw what I was trying to do there.
Yeah.
Good one.
I did have to visualize Matador and Bull. Red Bull is a bull, but if he's leaving Red Bull, that's not leaving a bull. He's Matador. It was confusing. I said Sebastian Vettel. I did the thing. I won the points.
Yeah, because I meant like Fernando Alonso is the Matador because he's Spanish.
Ah, yeah. You know?
And then he's being replaced by the Red Bull, the bull. Yeah. Look, I'm sure everybody at home got it.
Yeah.
You got it.
Guarantee so everyone else gets all of these, and I probably get 50%.
they're meant to be obscure. That's the point.
Yeah.
You know, they're open to interpretation because art.
Because art, yeah.
Yeah. Here we go. Career of rebirths. Used brains more than brawn. Maybe sunset soon.
Ooh, Jensen Button.
Yes!
Brawn.
What gave it away?
Zach, you're a genius.
The brawn. Yes!
I feel like Russell Crowe in A Beautiful Mind. Let's put it all together. There's bloody string everywhere.
Exactly, right. Number 23.
It's like True Detective
or whatever it was. Oh, gee. All right, last one. I almost read the first one again. I was about to open. Unexpected pace.
Yeah.
No. A fresh look, fresh face has shaken and stirred the field. Stale team with new form.
Is this Bottas?
Yes, it is Bottas.
I was like, it can't be Bottas again.
Yeah, exactly. What gave it away? Was it the middle verse?
New form. No, the new form.
Well, I thought the has shaken and stirred the field because
shaken and stirred.
What do you do with Martini? Who's their title sponsor?
Everyone at home listening got that.
Here I am, like, I'm working on a completely different level. I mean, I'm giving out little, as you said, little scraps so everybody can get them, people like you.
If I don't get it, all you have to do is explain it. And then everyone's like, man, that guy's Zach.
I hope that everybody saw that, you know, because the best jokes are the ones you have to explain.
Yeah, that's what I've learned.
All right, I hope that was a little bit of something to brighten somebody's day somewhere.
Yeah, that was the super quiz for this week. I mean, I'll dish one out again next week and hopefully we're in a bit of a better mood. Someone sent in an F1 dream as well. I'm going to hold that over to next week as well, because it's okay for us to make fun of each other.
Yeah.
But I don't feel comfortable making fun of someone else when, you know.
Yeah, and I think we'd like to collect a few of them as well.
So next week is going to be a great show.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, this show's fine.
We're doing okay. I think relatively speaking, we're doing great. Super quiz done though. It's time for a race preview. Sochi Grand Prix.
So, what's next?
It's Fernando Alonso here to check my lap from the French Grand Prix. Start approaching the main straight. You try to the last chicane to have a nice exit. Last chicane to have a corner. And then the first quick chicane of the circuit, right left, around 240 kilometers an hour as well in sixth gear, very high chicane. Again. Now we approach the second chicane, similar characteristics of the first one.
What do you know about Sochi?
Nothing. Champagne. Thanks very much for listening. I was going to try and watch the BBC
vignettes.
The Daniel vignettes that was made with David Coulthard and Sebastian Vettel driving the track. I didn't have time. Maybe I'll dub in their some impressions of the track. So, Zach, if I were to say to you what your favourite part of the track was...
I could be like, it's turn two.
Yep. And then I really like
the long straight after start and finish.
And I think overall, the track is going to be
pretty special. And once everything is finished, I think it will look incredible.
I would agree with that point about it being very
incredible.
Yeah.
Perfect.
That nails it. I think, I mean, no point even bother reading up about Sochi. You know everything you need to know now.
The only exciting thing I think about Sochi, two exciting things. New place. That's always fun.
Sure.
You know, we get to see new stuff. New landscape shots from helicopters. You know, the old Olympic Park stuff. I'm sure we'll see a lot of Olympic-themed tweets from drivers this week. You know, I saw Guido van der Gaal was practicing his one-man loose skeleton stuff.
Weird.
And I tweeted him because it looked like he was practicing, but he had a helmet on. But a lot of the helmet had weights on it. And he didn't tweet me back because he obviously doesn't know that I'm a host of the Famous Formula One podcast. Yeah. But that's not, you know, probably his PR manager didn't tell him.
He clearly didn't get it.
Yeah, that's fine. He's busy. But, the second point that's really interesting is that no one's driven here. It's a good leveling factor. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that will probably just mean Mercedes is going to be fastest.
Yeah, they're going to mop the floor with everybody.
But it might throw up some interesting stuff in the middle of the field, you know, and people will be finding new lines, new overtaking, finding where the grip is, you know, trying different stuff, especially through practice and qualifying. So, you know, be ready. It should be, look, not often do we get a new track.
Yeah. It's going to, I mean, by the time you hear this, it'll be really soon anyway, but it'll be everyone's first look at the track. I think it's going to be a hairy one.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely right. All right.
Oh, we should predict.
Oh, yeah. Every time I say Lewis Hamilton, I don't get it right. So Lewis Hamilton, pole, because I've got a reason for this because I think he is, if not the most talented, just pure talent driver.
Mm-hmm.
New track, he will be right on it right away. He'll learn quickly. He'll back himself. He'll be brave, and he'll find the right line. So I'm booking him in for pole. He's going to have a problem. Valtteri Bottas is going to win this week. You know what? Esteban Gutierrez for 10. There's that done.
Yeah.
Wow. So put me down for Hamilton, Rosberg. Guitar hero. I reckon I name checked everyone.
That was neat and tidy. Like he did that.
Yeah.
You're almost like, I don't want to blink or breathe in until I finish the sentence, which is everybody is going to come tense. Oh, what a relief.
One week I'll have my tenth prepped.
I like your idea that because it's a new track, it'll be in Hamilton's favour because his natural instincts will just give him an advantage. I think he'll probably take pole. I feel like Rosberg will probably win.
Reasons?
Because I think... Obviously, we've seen Hamilton do a little bit better at what you might think of traditional tracks as being. I think Rosberg, being the technical thinker that he is, might not get it together for qualifying, but with 50-odd laps of that place, he'll start to work out a few things. And, I mean, he's due.
He's due. He'll
be more determined than ever. He's running out of time. And, yeah, Magnussen.
Nice one. Mm-hmm. You totally had that prepped.
No.
Who's going to do the podium interviews? Will it be someone from the Russian politic?
No. But yeah, right, who is it going to be?
Riding on a bear, topless.
It's going to be a bear.
I think we drew for Brundle.
He's probably as good as anyone. He's probably like the person that Russian organisers would trust. I guarantee no one fringe is going to get up there. It's not going to be Russell Crowe.
Why can't we have Mika Häkkinen up there? That'd be great.
It'd be entertaining.
Exactly. I mean, the questions would be short. You know that?
Yeah.
You had a good race. Yes.
Why?
Good. Why? Talk. You won. Now it's your turn. You speak now. That would be great. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to it. It's nice. I love back-to-back races, but as we were talking about before the show, back-to-back races are awesome, except when it's a finite resource of races and you're like staring down the barrel of there being only, after this weekend, three more races to go.
Yeah, we'll be okay.
I hope so. I do hope so.
Well, that's the race preview done. We're into the final section, the champagne. I think we don't pop or spray champagne. Let's just.
As the drivers did this weekend. Yeah,
normally
very solemnly, there is the champagne.
Yeah.
Cheers, have one sip, put them down.
Normally we would promote Facebook and Twitter, obviously. We do that all the time, so maybe we just won't do that. But if anyone wants to, use the hashtag ForzaJules. That's ForzaJules. Like we said, the family appreciates all the messages. It makes a difference to use that. The more people who do it, the longer it keeps trending, the stronger the message is going to be.
Exactly. Now's the right time. And even if you just tweet that hashtag, you don't have to make a comment. Mm-hmm.
You don't have to tweet us. Just do it.
No, just hashtag ForzaJules. Very simple.
Mm-hmm.
That's all we're going to ask this week.
Yep. And that's it from the Super License guys this week. We're going to see you again in, I don't know, tomorrow. It's going to be so soon.
It feels like... Oh. Yeah, we're wishing away our lives with Formula One races.
Yeah.
It is happening rapidly, but let's call it Rod.
Till next time, I've been Rod.
I've been Zach.
Thanks very much. See you next time.
Bye-bye.